I appreciate that Pastor Becky asked me to be in the, here in the pulpit today and fill in, although admittedly we know no one could ever substitute for Pastor Becky, so it is good to be here indeed today. As the parables of Jesus go, today has to be one of the least familiar. It flows from the previous dialogue that Jesus has with the Pharisees about love of money and the search for riches, and you know where Jesus stands on that. So if you know this is going to be a talk about Jesus' feelings about money, if any of you want to get up and leave now, because you know the minister's going to talk about that, you're free to go, and I won't tell Pastor Becky about it. It's okay. This format today is really about the haves and the have-nots. It was a format that was used in Egyptian tales of the time. Sounds old and yet new, doesn't it? Tales of two worlds, earthly life and the life beyond. The world of the comfortable and the world of the afflicted. Hey, maybe this account in Luke was not really written in the 80s of the first century, but written last week. The haves and the have-nots, those who are comfortable, those who are not comfortable. Wondering about how to live now and what's going to happen after we die. Questions we still have today. You know. This could have been written last week. And wait a minute, that person living in the house beyond the other side of the gate or high above the gate, that could be one of those communities right here in Strongsville or nearby. Now, if any of you live in a gated community or in a house that's up high, I'm not, you know, chastising you. It's just the way some people live today. But there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a modern-day comparison. And maybe you frequent, or I do too, sometimes places downtown where there are people who don't exactly look like we do or act like we do. They might look a little bit unhealthy or like maybe they don't have quite as much money as we do, and maybe we don't want to get real close to them. This summer, two of our grandsons from Michigan visited. They're 9 and 11. They visited separately, and we went down to Indians games, and so I did the usual meemaw bit. If I grab your arm or the back of the belt in the back of your jeans, it's okay. I just want you to be safe. I know you're not a little kid, but I just want you to be safe because there are lots of crowds and not everyone is going to be as nice as Grandpa and Mima are. You know what I mean. You've done that with small children too. Just being a little more safe when we're not walking around in our neighborhood. There are many ways, thousands of ways, to reach out to the person on the other side of the gate. Using our resources right here is but one simple way all of us can reach out to the person on the other side of the gate. You might say the Lazarus is in our lives. Scholars tell us that this Lazarus was not the Lazarus who was the brother of Martha and Mary, the one who died. And it's interesting, in all of Jesus' parables, Lazarus is the only person that has a name. Very interesting. One wonders why. He's probably someone that definitely in the Census Bureau would be down in the lower socioeconomic class on all the charts. And Dives is sometimes a name given to the rich man, although he really doesn't have any name in the parable. Dives was really a Latin adjective meaning rich, so sometimes we call the rich man Dives. Even though we might say most of us would be on the other side of the gate away from Lazarus, quite likely we're not wearing purple linen clothing, which was a symbol of someone who had quite a bit of wealth. But most of us, quite likely, if I saw you or you saw me tomorrow and Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we'd likely be wearing different clothing or different combination of what we're wearing today. Something Lazarus could not do. So we kind of have the setting for this parable and what it leads us to. What kind of work do we do? We need to remember that nothing is said from Jesus that Dives was a bad man. It's not wrong. You're not a bad person if you have money. It's not, Jesus didn't say that at all. You're not bad. You're not evil if you have money. He didn't didn't do anything bad to Lazarus. The only thing that Jesus said was wrong that Dives did was he had an attitude of indifference or ignorance. It was his attitude. He didn't care. He ignored what was at his doorstep right there. Now, in our day and age, we would say, well, maybe Dives should have called some kind of social services to come and look at Lazarus and take care of him in some way. And that would have been a good thing to have done. But Dives simply ignores him. He does nothing. And who cares about Lazarus? The dogs who lick his sores. That's the only person, or the only creature, I should say, who cares anything about Lazarus. And then just when we hear all we want to hear about this ugly story, what happens? The situation is completely reversed, like the sand going through an hourglass. The situation is completely reversed. The one who has everything, the comfortable one, is now afflicted in Hades. And the one who didn't have anything now seems to have everything. The situation is reversed. Parable got me to thinking about using our resources, the riches we have, great or small. Neighbors in need, I've mentioned that. Where we have an opportunity to share with neighbors in faraway places. However small the amount may be that we can contribute, we can do great things. Most of you probably know, if you've been around the Christian church for a while, that it was the Christians who set up the first hospitals, the first orphanages, the ones who in the United States set up Harvard and Yale and Princeton. Pretty good, I think. All this had its beginnings, all a start by a peasant from Galilee. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. How much we have doesn't matter. It's the attitude we have and what we do with that attitude. There are a million ways to live and to share the good news. And we sell God short when we forget that, when we try to force ourselves into a narrow mold and fall silent because we don't have what as much as other people have. Sitting with a sick friend or a member of the church, sharing conversation and maybe their favorite song. Telling the truth to someone when they ask for it. Writing a simple note that restores hope. Making that short, simple phone call. Looking a teenager right in the face and really listening to them. Or looking down and really talking to a small child and laughing at their joke. Those are all really proclamations of the good news. Doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. Think of all the ways the good news has come to you. It wasn't probably at a big tent revival meeting or the preacher cornering you in your own couch at home when they came to your home in the olden days in the black car and the black suit. Maybe not for most of you. Robin Myers, who's pastor of a very large UCC church in the Midwest, says he has lots of people joining his very, very large megachurch. And he says people come to him and they want to join the church and they want to be a Christian. How to be a Christian? Show me, tell me how. And most of them expect him to give them a long list or say, read this book and then when you finish it, we'll talk about it. And you know what he says to them? Say thank you to the young boy who bags your groceries. Say thank you to the boy who bags your groceries. I had a similar incident some years ago. I was a new pastor in a church that was, the church was on around a center, there was a park in the center of town, and then around it was a series of small strip stores, malls, I should say. There was a Walgreens, a hardware store, even a shoe repair shop, dry cleaners, you have the idea. So I said to the diaconate into the second month I was there, we need to offer a brunch, a lunch to all these people, all our neighbors around here. I'd like to get to know them. I'd like them to get to know us. Sure, fine. We planned the brunch, lunch, and so I started out with the invitations in my hand. First stop, here was a church, was a nice grassy lot next to us. People have been wanting to buy, but we went south. So I went to the laundromat, first stop, first business next to the church. I handed an invitation, spoke with a young woman at the counter. Then in the corner to the back of the laundromat, there was a tall, older African-American man pressing white shirts. I nodded and went back. He nodded, it was okay. Gave him an invitation. He read it. He looked up at me with tears in his eyes. To this day, it brings tears to my eyes when I think of that day. And he looked at me, I'd introduce myself, of course. He says, Reverend, we've been here for a long, long time, and no one from that church has ever come over here and said hello to us. Church was too high. The gate was closed for too long. I made it a point of saying hello to him every now and then because I wanted that gate to be open. And I didn't want him or anyone else around that square to think we were that kind of church. I don't think we really were, but we had never taken the time to look beyond our own, and we really did high steps. It took me a long time to forget that event, but you can tell it to this day. I'm certainly not saying that I've not been guilty unintentionally of being too busy or forgetting to open the gate, but it reminded me that we all need to remember that. Many people today, many people of God, may still recline at the feast of power, while on the other side of the gate, people don't have enough to eat. The Lazarus of the world have not been invited, while some people of God are still belching their way through the feast. We need to remember that. True love for God is not complete without true love for God and without having compassion for others. And Jesus continues to challenge us to have that love for others as we would love ourselves. In numerous ways, this congregation does that. And as a newer member of this church, I'm just still learning all those ways. If I were to name one or two of them, then I'd forget others, so I won't name them. But a very visible one was when the new Christian caregiving team was blessed last week. There are already so many informal networks. If your heart is where your treasure is, for some of the wealthy who don't want to share, their treasure is away from God. For the poor, many of them have their treasure in God, and they are blessed that way. But some need earthly treasures. According to a speech given just a week ago at the Federal Reserve Bank in Cleveland, the person who gave the speech, a professor, said that there's sometimes poor people spend so much time worrying about money, it affects their thinking, and there was a lot of data behind that, of course, that their cognitive ability to make good decisions in other areas of their life was affected. I believe that. I've seen it when I was a school counselor, when the Ford or Chevy had shutdowns, many people were laid off then at other times. I saw what happened in families. That's just one example. You may have been through that yourself when you were looking for a job. It's just one example. Some sermons, I believe, are best when they're open-ended, when the ending is what happens when the congregation leaves the pews and goes out to the lives where you live and work and play and learn. So where do you work? Maybe you're not punching a time clock. Maybe you are. Maybe you're volunteering. Maybe you're at a different stage of your life. But to whatever places you go where you might be called to work, you can be doing some kind of work for God. And so I think that we can be doing that work. We need to be leavening bread and baking it and serving it to a hungry world in whatever way we can, wherever we go. We need to pull up a chair for the friend and for the stranger, to be generous out of whatever and whatever kind of abundance we have. Encourage someone who is lost and looking for a home, and forget about those labels we might carry around in our head. We don't need to keep people away from our communion table. We need to call each other sister and brother and sing and pray and laugh at the foolish and wonderful, magnificent creatures we are. In the Old Testament, in Jeremiah goes to God with lots of questions and feelings about all the unfairness in the world and all the bad things that are happening. People go to pastors with a lot of feelings and questions about that too. And in chapter 12, God, it seems, doesn't have much time for all that touchy-feely stuff. Queen Caldwell writes, "Nobody wants to hear your whining, Jeremiah." God says, instead of asking all these questions, Jeremiah, why don't you put on your big boy underpants and get ready for life? So maybe on your way out of church today, imagine that Jesus is meeting us right out here, or meeting you in the parking lot, or wherever it is you go to work and play. Jesus is meeting you with his dirty feet in those sandals. He has bony, tired knees, a matted beard, and those piercing eyes looking right at you and at me, and saying, "Where are you going to work for me? Where are your treasures and riches? And what are you going to do with them?" Amen.